I am this close to just chopping all my hair off. Hello, humans, and welcome to Audio Face, an irreverent podcast about the music news and music culture that mostly matters. I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
This is episode 155 of this here fine audio delivery experience, and
other said of this here fine audio face.
Yes, this here mini fine audio face. We've done many of the episodes for just wonking with the camera there. And three albums this week. We have Imploding the Mirage by The Killers. We have Super Good by Duckworth. No O. And we have Four, just titled Four by Big Black Delta, an album that, an album from an artist that Sean recommended in a recent, or our most recent music recommendations episode. Check back in a previous episode of Audio Face for that. As far as Audio Face things go, make sure you listen to the disclosure bonus that we did for the last episode. It's out. People are liking it so far. It's really good. I think it's one of the best bonus episodes that Sean and I have done of this kind. And their next album, Energy, will be reviewed in Audio Face 156, which is coming out next week at the same time. So we'll review it then. And also Power Report, it's a semi-monthly show, so it'll be every second Sunday. And so it's not this Sunday, you didn't see one then. But next Sunday, we'll be doing one with Bam and Caesar if they get finished siphoning money to the Republican National Committee. And then we can do an episode then. Should be fun. We'll release it on... That'll probably be the last episode I release in the Audio Face podcast feed, because then it's on its own, and then Audio Face can do its own thing. But let's get into the news. Let's get into the singles that we did this week. We had... I'm going to go in reverse order from what's on here, just because that's my flow. There's one called The Plan by Travis Scott. This is part of what Travis Scott is working on with Kid Cudi. Apparently, and I'm more looking forward to that project as it further goes, because I think Kid Cudi's one of those artists where when he collaborates with another artist,
I mean,
his most annoying parts can pare down.
Kitsy
Ghost is a very good
example. Exactly. I really liked a few of those tracks in Kitsy Ghost. I don't like both artists, usually by themselves, but Kid Cudi does really good work when he's aligned with somebody. His solo work is sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, but he can get a little monotonous at times.
Yeah.
And Travis Scott is definitely shit.
Yeah, I agree with most of that. The Plan by Travis Scott, which was released for the Tenet film, which is the most, it's like the blockbuster film that was supposed to come out in 2020. So it sucks because you can't have any blockbuster films in 2020. So, you know, that's all a separate disaster, but this song got released. It was ridiculous. I could barely listen to it. There's this one part in the middle where he does some like vocal change with his voice. Other songs and other genres that do that as well, but it just doesn't sound good. It doesn't sound gimmicky.
The auto tune is just gets crap.
The auto tune, the fucking auto tune.
It's bad. Like, you can make auto tune really good. I mean, Daft Punk has done plenty of tracks that with auto tune that are good. There's different trap artists that make auto tune that is good. This one is just bad, and the way he's done it multiple times all like throughout his career, it just isn't good. And I said that in a couple of his tracks in his last albums and stuff too. So it's just not good.
Yeah, we have different opinions on like Astroworld and more tracks.
Well, Astroworld, I like Sicko Mode is an okay song because I like how like it's broken up in a couple different things.
It's fair to say
things,
that I like Travis Scott more than you, to bare minimum. We can both find that this is like pretty garbage. Please do better, Travis Scott.
Really bad, yes.
And the next thing, it's less of a single, which is why I didn't want to like lead with it.
Yeah.
But it is a song off of Nas's new LP, King's Disease. Mm-hmm. Nas releases albums about every single year, so he's already well proven himself in like rap. So us reviewing
Lost Tapes 1 is amazing.
Yeah, us reviewing his albums. Well,
we did Lost Tapes 2 last year. I'm pretty sure
that's correct. Yeah. Us reviewing his albums, every single one as it comes out, gives us like it takes away opportunities where we could review other interesting artists that are coming up and like have their time to shine. So maybe we'll have time to talk about King's Disease more in depth, but maybe we won't. It's just more basis on what we have to review, because it was a decent project. But the main thing I want to bring up, there's two songs mostly notable here. The one I'll bring up is All Bad featuring Anderson .Paak.
I wish I could stay tonight, but I feel some type of way about. I've been staying up late, thinking about this day. And I wish I could stay tonight, but I feel some
ass was spotted on my denim pockets. And my wave grease would amaze geeks and freeze fly chicks where they stood. I never lost a step, stay splashing. Not
which,
one of
these, just got money. I think was pretty good. And in Nas's album, this recent one, he kind of chose carefully, but he chose from some of the newer artists in rap to kind of compliment the fact that he has a little bit of an uncle rapper at this point. So you want to kind of balance that a little bit.
Exactly.
But it seemed pretty good. Anderson .Paak's sort of like jazzy funk smoothness fit into this song
pretty well.
Yeah. And yeah, like I said, the overall project album is pretty good of King's Disease. There was one thing that made news, is that there's a song on here called Ultra Black featuring Hit-Boy that features a Doja Cat diss. Because the whole idea of the song is like Nas kind of overextending his blackness. Like he's very black, like very militant black, like proud to be black, that kind of thing.
And then going after alt-right Doja Cat.
Yeah, the diss towards Doja Cat, who has gotten a lot of flack for joining those like alt-right video forums and all that stuff. Yeah, there's always like this fine line between like, is Nas being a hotep by like challenging other people's blackness or not? Is Nas doing the whole Joe Biden, you ain't black thing? I think this is a perfectly fine diss because Doja Cat did get caught
pretty
red-handed. Yeah, so it's pretty bad there, I think. And Doja Cat, she pretended as though, like, oh, she made this joke, like, basically kind of comparing the song to, like, a Wiggle song, like the Australian kids band thing, which doesn't really have much of a connection and isn't really a good diss or a counterpoint anyways. Right. And this is all over, like, an Instagram video, so... Doja Cat not taking the diss really well, but like, you know what? The diss is deserved, it's fine, and we can all move on past this, that's not that big of a deal.
Moving on to...
this is bigger of a deal, because like the Doja Cat thing, there were a couple of, very small number, but there were a couple of people who were saying like, hey, this is another example of black men just attacking black women and being unfair to them, and I'm like, you're a rapper, you do dumb shit, you get to be dissed about, that's totally fine.
That's within the realm.
Yeah.
And then there's this.
Here's a different case. So we talked about a month ago where there's a case where Meg Thee Stallion was shot in the foot after an interaction with Tory Lanez.
At a party. At like 3 a.m. and all like...
I think it was in the middle of the day where like they were leaving the party because like the helicopters were up and like all the photos we have of it are in the day. So, but yeah, some altercation happened, and it appeared, at least back then, that, like, yeah, Meg Thee Stallion was shot in the foot. Meg Thee Stallion was with two other people, Tory Lanez and one of Meg's friends. Probably wasn't going to be Meg's friends. Meg's friend came out and said, like, yeah, of course I wouldn't do this, so, like, narrow it down. And so Meg Thee Stallion confirmed this week that, yeah, it was Tory Lanez who shot me in the foot. Reasons, etc. But, like, there are a number of different ways you could come to this story, one being, you got shot in the foot and you're just coming out with this now and like charging Tory Lanez. Why aren't there any like, why aren't you calling the police? Why aren't there more federal charges for this? And Meg Thee Stallion's like, yo, put yourself in my shoes a month and a half ago or so when that happened. We're in the middle of the Black Lives Matter protests, arguably still in the middle of those. There's this whole like increased tension between police and black people and violence. And there's a lot of like stuff spread around to fearmonger on all those sides. So am I, as a black woman, really going to tell the cop that, hey, there's a loaded gun in that car over there with me and two other black people, and we're, like, you know, like, involved in our own sort of, like, domestic dispute here, but we need you to fix the situation? Like, no, that's the whole point of the movement, is that calling the police in these situations often makes things worse. And I don't think Meg Thee Stallion wants Tory Lanez to be, like, shot and killed accidentally, but we can get back to the facts after explaining that thing of, like, okay, Tory Lanez shot Meg Thee Stallion in the foot, it seems like. And Meg Thee Stallion's not snitching, per se, because that was another accusation being accused towards her, because she's explicitly saying, I'm not going to the police. I'm just saying who this is, because for the record, like, I shouldn't have to just shut my mouth and be quiet.
Yeah, there's no
when someone shot me in the foot. Like, I'm going to be real about this. So it's really the annoying stuff that was happening was basically largely men, especially black men, who were, like, online saying that, oh, Meg Thee Stallion's a snitch. If
why the hell
anyone else is white, like, this wouldn't be a part of it. It's illogical.
It's stupid.
It's truly when you can call, it's like, okay, this is real, true sexism that's going on here.
Right.
Where, like, a woman, especially a black woman, cannot win for losing. Like, what should she have done in that situation that would have made it better? It really makes no sense. And I guess the last aspect surrounding all of this is that, like, Meg literally did a song on her drop this year called BITCH, which is like, you're going to call me this no matter what, how I act, so I'm going to be myself. And it's kind of sad that theme of that song really play. I mean, like,
it
played out so perfectly well here, and it played out so very well because, like we talked about with Killer Mike and Run the Jewels earlier, it's not that they're describing something that just happened. It's just that it's in the microscope right now, and it's something that's been going on for history, where, like, women are not given the benefit of the doubt by men. They're abused by men, mistreated by men, and when they look...
Oh, stupid woman, as they say, and other shit. I mean, it's... Yeah. You always hear it.
Yeah. And when black women especially, like, ask for help, ask for, like, attention to this, there's no support whatsoever. So I totally get the frustration and anger there.
Sure.
I went off on that, but that's pretty much all there is there.
So YB and Cordae.
Yes. We talked about... So YB and Cordae is one of my favorite, like, new school artists, rappers of the new time. His album, The Lost Boy, I believe, won Best Rap Album Audio Face Awards last year.
I'm pretty sure last year.
It was really good, especially because YB and Cordae was part of Rap Collective YBN. I believe stands for Young Broke Niggas, or at least it stood for, because they're no longer a thing. The weird part about that was because everyone else in YBN was sort of like your standard, like, trap mumble rapper artist, not really, like, Offset, Takeoff, Quavo wannabes kind of people. Not really that talented.
But YB and Cordae was...
YB and Cordae is on another fucking planet.
It's completely different.
Another solar system.
And it's really,
incredibly
really good.
So, basically, YBN founder YBN Namir, who's also, like, the source of a lot of these sort of issues and decrease in quality with the broader YBN project, tweeted that on August 6th, they left this YBN shit in the gutter. Remember that? I'll turn it up myself. Response by saying, wait, what? Someone said, yeah, wait, what? And he said, yeah, it's only me, kid. Basically insinuating that YBN is its own... like, YBN is just YBN Namir. It's no longer, like, this collective group of artists who have YBN in front of their name, which is fine, because it just seemed like YBN, YNW, all these other, like, different groups. They just, like... They were collectives because they came up together and they decided, hey, we're all artists and we're all hood. Let's, like, start getting together and do something. But as their style sort of grew, and as some of them were more serious about rapping, some of them were just, like, more fucking around, the artist trajectories changed, and it seemed like some people got butthurt about that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So now YB and Cordae is just going to be Cordae.
Yeah.
That's it.
Which is totally fine. It's not that big of a deal. The YBN wasn't the most important part of his thing. And I'm glad, because now this is Cordae now. He's 22 years old. He just released one of the top rap albums of the past year, the past couple years, and he's got nowhere to go but up, and he's got no other, like, label or other thing.
Other thing to hold him back.
There's not going to be any point in a review or, like, what happened to the other YBN people? Why does he still have this in his name? Why is he doing that? Because Cordae can way more stand by himself, to the point where having the YBN name definitely kind of holds him back to an extent. Yeah.
First review.
We have The Killers, Imploding the Mirage. It is 10 songs, 42 minutes long, and... boys, this is an interesting story, because The Killers have been around for a minute. They've been kind of mainstays in, like, alternative rock music.
Oh, for sure. I mean, they made Hot Fuss, their first album in 2004, is one of my favorite alternative rock albums of all time. It is amazing top to bottom. Sam's Town, their second album, was also very good. After that, they, like, some of their stuff was okay. Sawdust was okay. Day and Age, they started to do, like, that pop synthish rock, and then, like, Battleborn and Wonderful Wonderful, which Battleborn was all right. Wonderful Wonderful was garbage, and we talked about it in the early days of Audio Face. We definitely reviewed that album, and I was like, this is pretty shit. They have amazing live shows, but their new music is kind of crap. So let's see what they go on from this, because I've really enjoyed their early work.
Crap being it, just like, it seems
it's
like...
It's the Coldplay effect of, you become extremely, like, influential in music, you start, like, collaborating with different artists or stuff, or members of your band leaves. In the case of The Killers, they had, like, the guitarist, he did some type of he did, like, a sabbatical or other shit.
So yeah, I think an issue that was happening with very substantially with The Killers is that they killed it with their early sound, 2004 2007 ish and they didn't really grow from that. And so they fell to those Coldplay sort of norms of trying to collaborate with artists, trying to just, like, pick up whatever seems new in alternative music and bring that to the existing sound.
They just overgeneralized their sound. Sound is very bland, was the issue. And they've had, like, some decent songs in between here and there. I mean, some big radio hits, but it was nothing like like all the things I've done or anything. There's never
a complete project similar to Hot Fuss in the beginning where it's just like, oh, this is completely very good.
Exactly. But this album, like similar to Coldplay, like last year with Coldplay, I was like, wow, they made a decent album. This album has good and has bad in it. I think
I would say it's a step in the right direction.
For sure.
Like a full correction.
I think it's a full correction from Wonderful Wonderful. So I think Wonderful Wonderful was like their lowest album by far. It's funny, but their live shows, I watched like their stuff at Glastonbury last year, amazing. Like they're really good with their stuff. But their new work wasn't really good. But Employee of the Mirage, I think My Own Soul's Warning as an opening track was a very solid opening track. It reminded me a lot of The War on Drugs, actually. Sounds like a knockoff War on Drugs, because it's like a whole different level of alternative rock.
Yeah.
But I liked it. It was kind of fast-paced, more of like the normal Killers of getting to the chorus and getting up into there and just staying at like a solid alternative rock level, and I did enjoy that. I think it started, like Blowback, Diane Breed, it started to get a little samesy for the first opening tracks for that. I was like, okay, are they going to keep... The chorus for those two songs started to get a little monotonous, and it was a little lackluster. I'm like, okay, are they gonna?
It was really bland.
I'm like, okay, are they gonna do what they've done the past couple albums and just like stay at that level? But they started to go around about, say, Lightning Fields and Fire in the Bone. I actually started to like a lot.
We had talked about Caution in a singles thing. We're like, okay, this is a pretty
decent song.
I will focus on Caution. I may not even like sample it, but just to say that like. Caution's a good example of, okay, this is the Killers. They still kind of sound, for better or the worse, have sort of their blandness, predictable sort of song pattern layout.
Yeah, from like early build 2000s. Up, build up chorus, slow down chorus, build up end.
Well, it was just like a very standard rock thing that only became like kind of blasé and dull in the early 2010s.
Yeah, so like 2013 is like, okay, you could start to hear a little bit.
But you can see the elements of the rock aspects of what the Killers are doing that have been modernized for this moment. From what you can tell in Caution, it doesn't feel as bad. It doesn't feel as abrasive. It feels like, okay, it's modern enough. Maybe I heard it last year and maybe I heard it in a shopping mall.
Exactly.
But it still feels like it belongs in this time.
It doesn't feel forced. Is a big thing.
Yeah.
I think with Wonderful Wonderful, when they made that album felt extremely forced to be a good album. Like they were trying to make a mainstream good album. And I'm like, no, you like stick to what you're good at. Like obviously go deeper than that, obviously, and do more with your sound and improve upon it. But you have so much backlogs of stuff. Don't try and be somebody you're not in that regard. And now they did it with this album. I think especially two songs I liked a lot. Fire and Bone and Running Towards a Place.
Yes, Fire and Bone kind of reminded me, it was like the Killers version of, okay, we're going to do this 1975 style,
that's
modern, not like dance pop, but like dream pop.
Like the sound or something like that, like the Pink album 1975. That's what I felt in that era, like that. And I go, okay, they can actually do decently synth alternative rock pop, like that kind of genre. It is very hard to do.
And
right,
in order to that, they are kind of like, it immediately sounds like things that have come out earlier. So they're not
for
groundbreaking.
No,
but
not
least,
at all.
Again, like they're doing damage control here, so they can show that the killer sound can be updated for 2020.
Exactly. And I think that's what they've done with this album, is they... implemented, like you said earlier, a sound that you've heard, not to be funny with 1975, but a sound they've had earlier in couple past years and now bringing it forward to their own music. But I think My God I didn't really like with Way Is Blood, and then When the Dream Runs Dry and Imploding the Mirage, I think were very good ending two tracks to end out the album. I think it brought some of those cliche tracks back into it, but it didn't make it just straight alternative rock. It started to slow it down a little bit and do some other things. They did experiment a lot with more of the synthesizers because their guitarist is on a hiatus. So that is one thing that I wish he was part of it, because I wanted him to see what sounds he can do along with the synth, because I think that's what, like, for me, the 1975, that's what sets them apart from a lot of alternative bands, is Adam Hand, the guitarist for them. He can do the synth and guitar work at the same time. There's not many bands that can do that.
And help blend them together so neither one's overpowering.
Exactly. And this one, it started to get a little overpowered, the synth, especially then Blowback and Dying Breed. I'm like, okay, I can tell you're doing that. You're sounding like the War, like a cheap version of the War on Drugs there, but then they got a little bit better. So it's a very good step in the right direction. I think it gives me hope again in the Killers. Similar to Coldplay, I think Coldplay gave me way more hope than the Killers did in their kind of, like,
yes, that's for
I
sure.
think their return albums is, like, to say, kind of the return to form. Like, you get traded to a team, you know, you play some shit, you play some shit hockey.
A couple
of
years.
You're Nelson Kadri from the Toronto Maple Leafs. You get traded to the Avalanche and now you're scoring like 6 goals. You're like, you know, all right. Change of scenery, change of towns, you know, you gotta
You get adjusted, you get acclimated.
Exactly, yeah.
To me, my final points on this. So I usually have this point in listening to any album where I'm like, when does this end? It's a good album if I don't really have that point until the end. But usually with most reviews, I'm like, okay, when does this end? It's starting to overstay its welcome. And I had that moment at the title track, the last song, Imploding the Mirage, which is good in a sense that, like, okay, the album kind of extended the amount of time that it should have been.
I think it was
a perfect amount.
Exactly. Killers tend to make longer songs. I think that was one part that was issue of Wonderful Wonderfuls. They made that way too long for that album, so it just was a cliche album. This one, I think they chopped it up with just 10 songs, but some of the songs were a little bit longer than others, which they have done before, and I did enjoy that part. So it's a decent effort. It's nothing groundbreaking. I mean, 2020 has so much stupid good music out there, and we're going to get to some better music later on. But it's a good effort from them, so it's nice to see them return to form.
Yes. Arbitrary scale this week is the number of crashed cars in the Indy 500. One of those arbitrary scales that John picked.
Yeah, because literally the Indy 500 is going on. And right before this, there was a funny crash where a guy hit the curb, like, sit on the curb and just yeeted his car and just spun around. I was like, don't hit the curbs. The concrete curbs. Don't hit that. So this is like, usually there's like 35 cars that run an Indy 500. So, you know, if you got like, 15 cars or 20 cars that don't like that crash out, that's a solid 8500. So this is like, you got 12 cars.
12 cars.
Like, I think it's a solid 12 cars. Like, you know, you have like one spectacular crash, everybody's fine, and like no one dies, you know, and like naturally, like, everybody can step out. They go to interviews, like, I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
Next thing I know, I see asphalt. Next thing I know, I see air. Next thing I know, I see
one
asphalt.
One has 1 minute, next minute kind of conversation. Yeah, I'll give this like nine cars. We're not an Indy car if it's not like 10 cars. It's not like,
oh, exactly. Right? So like a restart just like pile up and you're like shit.
9, I almost feel like I got my money's worth, but I still feel like 9 is like, it's almost like going to a baseball game. You don't really expect any action if you're attending the game, but you do feel a little bit robbed. There's like, what, like no runs? Like,
yeah, exactly. You're like the 7th inning and it's still 0-0 and you don't know the pitcher duels and you're like, what is this shit?
Yeah. Decent album. So, Billie Eilish capitulated to the Democratic National Party and decided to perform at their convention. I'm kind of kidding. She performed My Future at the Democratic National Convention. It was actually the first time she performed live, this debut of a single that came out. Mm-hmm. Live is, of course, in like asterisk, and at the convention, of course, in asterisk, because video. The entire DNC was done by video, which, you know, the Democratic Party this year started with the Iowa caucus, which was a complete disaster and horribly organized. The DNC, even though it looked like a chaotic Zoom meeting with a lot of like technical glitches,
right.
At least it was better organized than the Iowa caucuses. It's a low bar to meet, but at least you got that. Eilish filmed the PSA along with the video, saying, I'm going to paraphrase but read through this, Donald Trump is destroying our country and everything we care about. We need leaders to solve problems like climate change and COVID, not deny them. Leaders who will fight against systemic racism and equality, and that starts with voting for someone who understands how much is at stake. Basically begging people to please vote. Billie Eilish is in her right as a multimillionaire celebrity in deeply blue Los Angeles to say that. But I
at least, like, Yeah, but like, look who you're voting for. But at least Cardi B is like, yo, Biden, what about Medicare for all, though?
Yeah, that's the thing. Is I'm not going to expect too much from Billie Eilish, although she is pretty good on politics. But like, yeah, we should normalize the idea of, yeah, okay, you won. The Democratic Party did all of their Democratic partying nonsense, yes. And they got us, all right? So like, yeah, sure, we'll vote for the
dementia one who touches people way too much.
Yeah, but we're going to like...
fight like, you.
Climate change better be in your first 100 days if we do this. Like, I think there needs to be more of like a bartering thing with the broader Democratic Party. But of course, Democrats can't be organized. That's not going to happen. Fiona Apple is also continuing a year of wokeness this year. She is narrating a documentary called We Have Rights when documenting ICE arrests. And it's kind of a documentary short film showing people how to document or record or practice journalism when immigration and customs enforcement in the United States is taking part in one of their raids to round up undocumented immigrants and try to send them back to their home country in the very xenophobic way Trump is doing. Of course, there are like certain different legal things and ways like that. So someone else put that together. Fiona Apple lent her voice to narrate it. But I think it's really cool. It should definitely be a...
Well, I always liked her voice, especially her album that she did earlier.
Fetch the Bolt Cutters earlier this year. Yeah, was really good. The film is created... It's a part of a series of animated shorts created in partnership with Witness, Brooklyn Defender Services, and We Have Rights. So, like, these folks know what they're doing. They're just, like, bringing some star power to it. But I think it's really good. Here's some interesting stuff Fiona Apple said about it, actually. You have to know the rules to be able to help. You might be trying to help film an immigrant or their family member, or you end up hurting them. Just film the badges, the street signs, or maybe you don't make a copy of the film, or know that you need a 6-digit passcode in order to exercise our Fifth Amendment right. We need to stop the fingerprint and face recognition. Or know that you have to keep filming. Don't stop filming and save the unedited version so you could go back and see all the facts. It's such valuable information, and getting that info and learning it, for me at least, makes me feel equipped to help. So yeah, there's a bunch of different things where that's another interesting thing. A lot of people have like face recognition or like fingerprint recognition on their phones, but police officers have just used that like force, like just held the phone to the person who's being held captive. They've held it to their face or like forced their finger on the fingerprint reader, and they get it. So getting around that's all super helpful, and I'm glad that Fiona Apple is participating in something like that. It's interesting for a white artist to do, but
white woman.
We respect it here.
Always.
Next album.
Yeah, we have Supergirl, Super Good. Wow, that's hard for me to say. By Duckworth. It is 16 songs, 44 minutes to the dot. I wish it was 444, you know.
Right? I think we had another like 444 album. Yeah. But anyways, we talked about Duckworth a little bit. He's gotten some like Grammy industry sort of attention from his like recent work.
Got some stuff with like the Spider-Man films and other stuff.
Yeah, The Fallen Man was his last project that we reviewed on Audio Face, and we felt it was pretty good. It was just very much like an EP drop sort of thing. So it was a collection of songs, not fully complete, but it showed a lot of range, even though it was a little bit disorganized. It showed that range was definitely there. You get to Super Good and you get a lot of range in a rap album. You get pretty much everything, a little bit of electronic music, a little bit of trap in the beginning.
Like you get trap and B, you get hip hop, you get some electronic beats. It's a lot.
There's some house. It's really interesting and kind of holding and piecing. It's interesting and it's up to interpretation what is holding and piecing the album together more broadly.
My thing is that it almost, like, for the first maybe 5-6 tracks, it feels like just one giant continuous song, because the way each track goes into the other song, it just keeps going and flowing and flowing. And I really enjoyed that part with it, because within the, like, Money, we have New Love Song starting it off. I think it's a great little, almost like a trap and beat style without too much trap style of rap, going into Money Downs, which is a little bit more upbeat tempo of trap and beat.
What a lot of albums do contemporarily, where even if they're not going to be trap heavy, they start with their trappy songs to kind of
to suck you in.
And then they continue.
The thing with it is, I like that it kind of continues on and morphs into a really gorgeous album, because the thing with that genre is, if you chop it up and bring it to different songs, it can get static to me. It can get like a little monotonous. Sometimes I felt like that on Ventura with Anderson .Paak a couple of times, or just like, because after a while I was like, okay, I know like your song and dance, what you can do, let's see how you connect it into the rest of it to make it a little more cohesive instead of just being generic. And it definitely does that, because all these songs, especially in that first half of the album, are quite different, where they're doing different things within the genre. They're doing adding electronic beats to it. There's a couple songs like I think Coming Closer right after Kiss You Right Now in the middle of the album is like, that beat is amazing. I love the use of electronics on it. The voice of Julia Romana is awesome into it.
Me a little taste and I want more. We went full force on a 4-4. Figgy down, make it bust like we was on tour. Lovesick, maybe that I'ma need cures. I'm not even going.
I really like it. Right before that, you'll Kiss You Right Now, which is kind of this cool little slow down right after all the trap and B. And it's almost the little like love ballad of like, I don't give a fuck who's around right now. I just want to kiss you right now. Like you're my woman, you're my thing. That's just, I don't care. I just want
pure smooch. Yes.
Exactly. It's just pure like infatuation with someone. Like, I get that. I like right after Coming Close, I can say what you mean. Do you notice again with Julia Romana?
Wait, really fast, did we go into Quick too much? Because that was one of my favorite things from the top of the
album. Oh, no, we can
go the song Quick in the beginning is sort of like this, it's trap and B, but it has like a really tight trap beat, so you might think of it as a trap song. But you know I never exit, get to flipping like a trap phone, but I never lose connection. If you're feeling that I'm on your line, hit me with a right click, and I put that on everything. You ain't met a nigga like this. Don't get me started, but I got you wanted. Can't give you the world, but you know I can promise you. House too big, but a car too quick, and if the show fits. But there's enough singing in it. There were a lot of really good singers in here that really compliment.
They're fantastic, yeah.
Julia Romana popped up for a couple of different songs and does a really good job in it. Mm-hmm. But it always adds this, like, Aminé was kind of like the force of all of them, where like he could sing and he could rap and have all these collaborators at once. Duckworth isn't quite that, but once you add the collaborators and
the collaborators are fantastic. Singers,
it's really good. It really ties the whole thing together.
I think it's the Kid Cudi form of like the tracks by it, like Duckworth by itself himself is good. But when you bring in a bunch of other people who still go along with the thing, who don't necessarily make it their own, but compliment them well, fantastic. I think this is one of my favorite. Even Super Bounce with Earth Gang, I think was very good.
This is my first time actually realizing Earth Gang was on it, but it totally makes sense.
Oh, yeah, because we reviewed Earth Gang last year, I like to say.
Revenge of the Dreamers last year.
Revenge of the Dreamers last year, yeah. And it's one of those things where I saw with Earth Gain, I'm like, okay, this will be interesting to see how their sounds mix, because they're a little bit different, and it did well. All of his collaborators on this album, I think, hit it on the nail on the head. I think it did it to where every song was cohesive, which is very hard to do, and I applaud it, because there's a lot of albums that you see with different collaborations and then just fell flat because sometimes they put too much of their own spin on it. But again, I love it where especially the first half of the album feels like it's one continuous song going up until about Coming Closer, and then it stops, and then it kind of picks back up where some of the songs flow together, some of them stop and get a little bit slower towards it, which I like, because instead of chopping it up into just boom, boom, song, I think it's a very good thing for this album.
The album adjusts pace, and it does that in a very complimentary, easy to listen to
way. I didn't feel like it was running long whatsoever. Like 16 songs is a lot, but it didn't feel like at any moment I wanted like, all right, let me skip on to the next one. It was just next thing I know, I'm like, oh shit, I'm in another song.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it happened to me I had to listen to this album twice through, because the first listen through, I go, whoa, okay, wait, I'm into another song. Okay, let me see what happens again. It really doesn't feel long at all. It feels like it's only like 35 minutes to me, because it just flows so well. Construction of it's fantastic.
Last two songs, Super Good and Find a Way.
Yes.
As far as our like 2020, how does the album
how does the album end, right?
How does the album end check real quick? I think it's to borrow from one of the title tracks and the name of the album, it's super good. It's pretty good. It lands the album pretty nicely. Don't drop it. Fast, baby, be supersonic. Mask.
all them niggas throw this traffic. Boy, this fast cash, Venmo me them economics. Super bounce, don't drop it. Fast, fast, baby, be supersonic. Get your gas mask, all them niggas throw this traffic. Boy, this fast cash, Venmo me them.
Sitting here in this parking lot in the tightest spot.
I don't think it's anything spectacular, but yeah, it's a fitting ending for it. It still goes within the flow of it, slows it down like it should, but it's nothing like Contact.
Because that's the last part of the album where, like, I feel like Super Bounce and Super Good could have been, like, complimentary songs that go together, not just because of the titling, but I think because, like, the motifs and themes flow through it very well. But you have some songs like Weekend, Tuesday, World on Wheels, which complement the vibe of the album, and they do extend it, but it wasn't one of those extensions where I look at my phone and I go, when does this album end? I was actually, like you said, Sean, really happy with the pacing of the album and how it ended really well.
Very good. Yeah, I was surprised. I still think Aminé's, I think his flow is a little bit better and stuff within like this genre of like trap and B hip hop, like this
alternative mix,
alternative trap and B,
which is I think we both agree is where all the interesting shit is currently happening.
Oh, it's
right
my
now.
Favorite shit. I think it's yeah, exactly, because they're the ones who I say, like I always say, trap can be good. You just have to mix it up and do different things. Which the mainstream trap artists, for the most part, you have your exceptions, kind of still do the same thing over and over and over again, and it just gets monotonous. The people who mix it up with different stuff, it's fantastic. You get the same thing in rock and EDM and pretty much any genre.
Yeah.
In indie even. Yeah.
The great thing is that we are finally starting to experience what it's like when the music industry as a whole kind of like follows Audioface.
Seriously.
And so the ones that are blowing up right now are the people who are trying stuff different with trap. And then like your Migos is your all of those are sort of like falling by the wayside, kind of as it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Let's crash some metal, shall we?
All right, this is like, it's solid. Okay, this is two crashes.
On an arbitrary scale this week, which is indie 500 car crashes.
Yes, yeah, because this is going on right now. This is like a first, a 10 car pile up. But when you like you clear all the cars, you're still in caution, so you slow down, and then three other cars crash during the caution flag. That's this album. I was like, damn, this shit's good. Oh, another crash! You slowed down, you idiot! Yeah, that's,
in this case, is more crashes is better, for the record.
Oh, yeah, but yeah, by the way, exactly.
I'll second that. I'll go with that. It's a really proper good album. And let's move into the rest of the week. Music business worldwide, Slim Pickens. Okay, it is a slow week in music news, and so we go to Music Business Worldwide, where all of the music business happens worldwide, and it's on a website where you can read new things. Okay, so this is, we always pick like one story if we are desperate for stories that is like related to something we've talked about on Audioface, and this is the case. We talked about the case of where Genius, the lyrics company, they used to be called Rap Genius. There's basically probably one of the better designed lyrical websites on lyrical websites on the internet. Found out that Google was stealing their lyrics, basically using their power as a search engine to be the place that people go to before going to Genius's website to find lyrics, but then stealing that lyrical information and data from Genius without crediting them or telling them. It seemed like it was happening. Genius had proof based on how they secretly code the lyrics to figure out if people are like stealing their shit. So it goes before the judge, and this judge says that federal judge Margot K. Brody, says that at the center of the decision directed the court to close the case, basically pass it off, no further judgment. Google wins, quote unquote, Genius loses. Basically saying that
just throws it out.
Let me see. Plaintiff likely makes this argument without explicitly referring to the lyrics transcriptions as derivative works, because the case law is clear that the original copyright owner has exclusive rights to authorize derivative works. Which is basically saying that, like, Genius can be as mad as Google as they want to for stealing these song lyrics that they're curating. But the fact is, Genius doesn't own the song lyrics.
Exactly. It's the artists who own the song lyrics. So if the artist went up and said, hey, you can't, Google, you can't do that with Genius because Genius is the one, like, you can't do that. That's a different thing.
Yeah.
But Genius is getting lyrics from artists and then posting lyrics, and Google is getting the lyrics from Genius and posting it on. So
yeah,
it's a thing with, like, who Google owns
is,
what.
Like, Google is stealing the stolen information. If you consider lyrics being stolen, like I wouldn't agree with that because you're just reproducing what an artist put out there.
Exactly.
But that's the thing, is that Genius doesn't own those reproductions. Ultimately, as far as a legal sense goes, the owner of those words in that structure and in that pattern
is the artist. Which makes sense.
Yeah. So they're not going to be able to do anything there. Nothing's changing with how you Google song lyrics or anything like that. Not like anything was going to change. But
it's just interesting to see. I was wondering what the judge would say, and I'm like, that's a decent.
It's a decent ruling. And it makes a lot of sense. Not a lot of these legal rulings are make a lot of sense as this, so we'll take them where
solid.
We can.
Yep.
And our last album of the week is Four, Number Four by Big Black Delta. It is 12 songs, 47 minutes long, so on one of the longer ends of what we reviewed. Mm. And Sean brought up Big Black Delta in a music recommendations episode. I'll take you away to like intro it.
Yeah, so I talk about Big Black Delta because he's an artist that he's been around for a little bit, kind of like the indie underground scene of like, he's done so much different work where he kind of had like that Jai Paul sound in the early 2010s. He morphed into more of almost like a straight techno maker for a wild house. He did alternative rock, he did indie rock, so he's done a lot of different stuff. And he released some singles earlier this year, the first single being Summoner, and I'm like, oh shit, this is like more of that like deep electronic style of music, like almost like Deadmau5 gets really angry. Okay, let's see what happens. Well, he puts in an album, and then some couple other singles came out, and I was listening to it. I'm like, okay, this album's gonna be eclectic as fuck, and it's definitely eclectic as fuck. But
yeah, because Summoner does
way.
Summoner, which we put in, we mentioned in our music recommendations episode, is a very electronic song, pretty
like it's I call it a dystopian electronica.
It's techno, like it. Yeah. It's not like quite progressive house, but it's definitely firmly
it's
EDM. It's techno.
Yeah. But the album doesn't start off that way at all.
It doesn't start off like that. It doesn't end like that. It has moments where it dips into techno kind of as a compliment to its overall rock thing. But I kind of compared it to like Radiohead and its extensive like how it uses, it borrows from these different genres and sounds to build a larger thing that's kind of coalesced around more alternative rock.
Yeah, so it started off with Lord Only Knows, which is one of my favorite rock songs of the year so far. I think because what I was talking about, like with the Killers, you can make a decent like alternative rock song, but it's going to be kind of cliche with the way they do it. But Big Black Delta did it very good, where he's like, "Lord only knows what you want," and it's stuff with and like has that theme going on in the background. It starts off kind of like really big, almost Van Halen style rock, but then it morphs into this beautiful different thing with a piano going on in the background towards the end. Kind of synthesizers going on along with the instrumentation. It's a lot to listen to, but it's something that's very unique and different in that regard for an opening track. I'm like, holy crap, this is a lot. And I listen to that song a lot. It's also one of his singles too that I did listen to a few times. A fantastic opener. I was like, okay, now I don't know really what to see because he started off with that. Let's see what happens to the rest of the album. Vessel Go after that is more of like your kind of standard rock song. I'm like, okay, he went more into that alternative rock, kind of like harder alternative rock into that. I'm like, I'm okay with that.
It sounds like a Franz Ferdinand or any sort of like standard alternative rock.
Politics of Living is good after that. I think the lyrics of that is kind of cool. It's like literally live your politics. Live what you say, mean what you do. And I love that theme. Still kind of into like your standard rock theme. So I was like, okay, first song's fantastic. Second two songs were okay. Let's see what happens. And then he brings in Summoner after that, which is straight like a techno dystopian world. I'm like, whoa, it's just, I didn't expect him to put it there. And it just gets at you and it's angry and it's just going at it.
If anything, the song sort of breaks up different parts of the album. Because if you get into later, after that,
Ballad
of Codependent, it's sort of like a slower part of the album until another thing.
Yeah, exactly. So then it goes into Ballad of the Codependent, which is slower. Sunday, Heaven is kind of picks it back up. Heaven Here I Come is a fantastic rock song. It's very, very good. In heaven's time, repeating after me, heaven might come. Heaven might come. again, he's using more of the synthesizers, but not being cliche with it and not overdoing or overstepping anything. Kind of keeping in within what he's done before, but moving his sound further. It's still like an eclectic.
And to me, it sounds like a more modern, like rock, alternative rock spin than even what the Killers did earlier this
year. Sure.
Like when we were talking about in the Killers review of how can you take, I'm not off the top of my head, the Big Black Delta has been working as long as the Killers have.
No, like, he's been doing like 2008 or 9, so he's been around for a while.
He's still in the decade. I would consider him like a 10s kind of person.
For sure.
But like, you're taking sounds that would be sort of normal in the early aughts, and you are modernizing them, updating them, mm-hmm. upgrading them, really, for the modern time. And it works out in Heaven Here I Come.
And then you have Canary right after that, which is...
Canary.
Which is straight up another like techno style song, which just goes into it. It's fast paced. That one's only like 2.5 minutes within it, but this straight electronica, which is really cool to have right after that track. And I was like, I thought when I was listening, right when I got up to that song, I was like, okay, this is like him almost trying to do a Kid A style of like, you have Idiotech, then you have Optimistic. You have like a bunch of different sounds that not many people can pull off. And I was like, okay, let's see how
And not many people can pull off putting them together. But even though you're going on a lot of different rides, I can play through the album and it doesn't feel very alien.
No, it still feels, it's not like Bjork, where Bjork can feel super alien at times. It's not that eclectic where it can alienate people. It's more like you can still get into it. The only thing is that the ends, I didn't like the ending tracks. White Lies was okay, but Killing Me, Air Conditioned Dork, and Yes were just, it really slowed down. Air Conditioned Dork and Yes were almost like instrumental style pieces that I wish he worked on a little bit more, maybe have done up, because the rest of the album was amazing. I really liked it. The last couple tracks were just, they didn't land that plane well. It like skipped off the runway a few times. You still land, like nothing came out of it, no oxygen mask or anything, but it was just like, flight was good, landing was rough.
I do like Air Conditioned Dork. It has some like nice muted piano in the background.
Oh yeah, I do like it. Yeah.
Nice, almost. Again, this remind me the most of a Radiohead project, because you have these like ethereal, echoey voices in the background, mm-hmm. a soundscape.
I just wish they didn't do it for two tracks in a row.
Because
they did that with Yes right after, because I do like Air Conditioned Dork, but you did it with Yes as well, and I'm like, okay, I'm like, is this the last track? And it ends. I'm like, it left you just a little too much of a lull. I wish it wrapped it up, because Air Conditioned Dork, if you did another song, like if you click out Yes, you could end on Air Conditioned Dork, but you can't do two in that, because it lulls you out too much is my thing.
That's pretty fair.
But I think it's, he's an artist that doesn't get a lot of recognition because he's a smaller artist, but I think this is one of my favorite albums of the year. I don't think it'll get album of the year at all, but it's still one of those things that there's a lot to listen to with this album. There's a lot that multiple people will like of different genres, and there's something that not many other artists are doing.
Yeah, if you're one of those genre hoppers who's listening to audio things like and like looking for some little random extra little thing to add
have
to your week, Big Black Delta did
and then
a
also,
good job.
Yeah, and also look at his other discography too, because he has a lot of other work that is fantastic. So I think this is one of his stronger albums. Again, I just wish it ended a little bit better, and then it would have been like up there of my favorites. But solid.
Just could have stuck the landing. Because
exactly.
I get what you mean. Like with the last two, usually I think artists maybe fall into a trap of wanting to make the last two songs sort of similar so they work together and help end the album, right? But you even want to have some separation between those last two songs and make them a little bit different and distinct.
Exactly.
Again, Don't Get Lost in Heaven, Demon D. That's the
gold
standard.
I was
going
to say, that is
the
gold standard. There isn't many else that can do that. Maybe, what is it, Contact for Random Access Memories, I think is the last one.
Yeah.
But doing it right,
like Motherboard in Contact.
Or some Motherboard in Contact. Like, Demon
Days. Doing it right in Contact.
Doing it right, yes. It's doing it right in Contact. Like, that's the other gold standard. Like, there's not many people that can do that.
Yeah.
But anyways, this is like a solid, let's do...
I'm going with my 10 or 11 crush.
Yeah, comments. I was
going to like, I'm happy
this is,
with
this
the
is, This is two big crushes that happen. Once at the pretty beginning of the race, once towards the end, and the race ends under a caution and everybody's sad.
Yeah. No deaths, no injuries.
No deaths, no injury, but everyone's like, I gotta end under caution. Damn, I guess that's what's gotta do.
It's lame. Yes. But a good album.
But a good album, exactly.
Quick hits, we like to end Audio Face on a fun note. We always do. And this one was genuinely one of the coolest like live performances I've ever seen. I've always talked, yeah. If you've listened to Audio Face before, you'll know I always like recommend people to watch music videos. I think they're cool. And so I'll link to this music video in the description of the podcast. You can just click on it and go to it on YouTube. But this is the Avalanches. They are a really interesting band that mixes, they sample different sounds and radio recordings and existing music from the 70s, 80s, and 90s and turn it into modern dance music, modern alternative music, kind of anything. The Avalanches are a really interesting band, and there's a future Audio Face episode where I talk to one of the biggest audio
Avalanches fans. Almost like a modern Giorgio Moroder or something like that, in that where it mixes a bunch of different sounds.
Yes, in a very similar way. But there's a future Audio Face episode where we'll go into the Avalanches history, and so I'll leave that there. But the idea of plunder phonics, where you just take sounds, put them into new sounds, that's what the Avalanches does. They've done two albums, and they have a new one coming out at some point. But they've released a couple of singles that are star-studded with a bunch of celebrities and other artists. And so this one, you have Wherever You Go, which is with Jamie XX, Nina Cherry, Mick Jones from The Clash, who also worked on Plastic Beach, and Calypso, who's an amazing singer. They created a music video for Wherever You Go, one of the lead singles off their next album. But what they did with this is they had different members of NASA perform different parts of the recording on a webcam, and then they like splice it all together to make a live performance. This is actually one of the first times that the Avalanches themselves, Robbie Carter and Tony DeBlasi, those Australians, have appeared on video in an Avalanches music video. So that's kind of awesome. But it's this really fun,
it's so cool,
7-minute song that's like, it fits the sense, because like Wherever You Go is sort of like a wanderer travel song, and it fits perfect with the idea of space.
And it feels like a space song. It feels like you can float through it.
Yes. All the different related NASA and non-NASA people who are credited at the end did a really good job at doing this.
It was a really cool video.
And there's also a really interesting thing that there's an astronomer and astrophysicist, Frank Drake, who created the Drake equation, which if you're an astrophysicist,
you
makes
know
sense
the Drake
to you.
Equation.
Basically, he had this secret message from the 1970s that he hasn't revealed to anyone, but he offered to reveal to the Avalanches for help with their newest album.
Whoa.
So basically, the Avalanches have this whole like binary code of ones and zeros, and they're like, this is it. We don't know what it is yet, but we're going to turn it into music before we release our next album, so stay tuned.
That's dope.
Yeah, I get excited talking about the Avalanches, because especially after doing that episode with Oliver, which I'll hopefully release soon, there's so much to dig into
there's
with
a
this
lot
interesting
of
band. They're really rad, they're really creative, and it's kind of the stuff that Audio Face is all about. So, thank you for listening and watching to Audio Face podcast and show. You can watch us on YouTube at youtube.audioface.show. Make sure to subscribe to us so you don't miss out on any more videos. And if you're already subscribed, like and comment on our videos, because that little bit of engagement tells YouTube that people like the video and shows it to more new people who can then subscribe and do the thing, and it all continues like an ecosystem. But if you're listening on a podcast as a podcast, we love the podcast listeners because you get to listen to the music samples and that's fun. Continue doing that and make sure you're subscribed at those places on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all the new places we're at, etc. But yes, of course, thank you very much for listening. I can be found on Twitter at Dan from the Web, or on Instagram at Dan from the Internet. Sean can be found on Twitter and Instagram at SW Suarez. The entire show can be found on both platforms at Audio Face Pod. And we will talk to you next week, where we should have a lot of good things, music to talk with. Cheers. Peace.
Bye. Hey, look at that. My iPad's at 4%.
4%.